Hello, welcome back to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I am your host, Matthew Pfeiffer, and today we have on a very special guest. Today we have on Carmen DeLutri, and he is out of Fort Myers, Florida. And as you guys know, we like to bring on people who can help you through your divorce or high conflict situation. This is going to be a little bit different. This is not a family law attorney, but as you know, there are so many different aspects of when you're putting your life back together. It's not just emotional. Well, oftentimes it's financial, or sometimes it can be co-parenting, those sorts of situations. We're going to talk a lot about finances today, but without further ado, let me kick it over to our guest and let him introduce himself. Carmen, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for lending us a part of your day. I'm going to kick it over to you and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Thank you, Matthew. My name is Carmen DeLutri. I'm president and founder of the DeLutri Law Group. Been in practice about 30 years now, but the DeLutri Law Group's been around more than 25. I can't do the math. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And over the years, we've had one common message that we're here to help individuals who've lost hope. And we do that several different ways. We help them. I've been called a financial crisis attorney. Yeah, I've been called a lot of things. Mostly attorneys call me bad things, but that's all right. I'm very great to my clients.
Yeah.
So that's all that matters to me. But the point of it is we're here to help people get through the rough times in life. And usually it's after a divorce, when people are having a really hard time financially. And they come to us and they're seeking help because they want to take care of their family. And if it's a single mom, single dad now, they want to take care of their family. The finances from a two-income house now has become a one. Mm-hmm. And they really can't meet all the needs that might have arisen in the time. So they're looking at us for help. Sometimes couples come to us before they file for divorce saying, hey, we want to clear out the financial issues first.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's a good idea. Sometimes it's not. But ultimately, we're here to help people through the rough times in life. And, you know, we also have people handling personal injury, wrongful death claims, and as well as wills, trust, and estates. Because believe it or not, there's a lot of single people out there who need to take care of that wills, trust, and estate mm-hmm. issue, especially when there's children involved.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a newly single parent. What happens if I'm in a car accident and I die? What happens to my children? Who's going to take care of them? And that's a huge issue for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot going on over here.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a lot. I want to dig a lot more into this financial aspect. But one of the questions I have, because a lot of times when people are coming out of a divorce, let's talk about after the math before we get into the being proactive about a situation like this. A lot of times people kind of have a bit of a chip on their shoulder after divorce. You know, they're ready to buy a house immediately, ready to kind of put their life back together immediately. And oftentimes they might know that there's some financial trouble, but they kind of feel like they have it, where sometimes they may not actually have it altogether. How would someone know that they really do need some sort of intervention, that they probably should call, you know, you or someone like you, like yourself?
Well, the first thing you want to do is you want to sit down and take inventory of your income, your expenses, your assets, and your debts, and really figure out is, okay, how close am I to financial freedom, or what does financial freedom mean to me?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? Well, what's my income? What are my monthly expenses that are fixed? Okay. Your mortgage, your car payments, your other things. Then you got your variable monthly expenses. So once you take out the fixed monthly expenses, you look at the variable monthly expenses, your electric bill, how much you're going to spend on food, going out to eat. What am I going to, you know, give myself as a reward? Am I going to buy myself something this week, or am I going to put it in savings? And really, it takes a lot of discipline to do that. But as you know, when you're coming out of a relationship, those are the tough decisions you got to make, because you've got other things now you're thinking about. You know, the two income goes down to one, you've kind of narrowed the funnel, and now you're thinking to yourself, okay, what do I really want in life? Because now you're thinking, all right, what's most important? Well, I want to be a great parent. I want to be a great person. I want to be a great role model for my children. What am I going to do? I got to teach them financial responsibility, so I got to be financially responsible. Or the alternative is I just go reckless, because now I'm out of this relationship and I want that boat.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted that boat and I could never have it while I was married. Those types of things. Or I want that new piece of jewelry. I want that watch. I just want it. And again, that's really where, you know, it comes down to the individual. I usually come into play after all those wants are met. And now it's like, oh my gosh, we got to pay the piper. How are we going to do this? Or something bad happens, like a loss of a job or something else where, you know, an illness where now I can't afford all these things that I used to. And how am I going to do this? So yeah, there's a lot of give and take. And then the worst part is this is when, you know, the other spouse finds somebody else and they're living a better lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So now I got to keep up with the Joneses and appearances because I don't want my child to think that they've got a better life there because they can give more stuff. And we both know it's not about that.
Right.
We both know that.
It's not about that, but it's very difficult not to go down that wormhole. And sometimes the kids will, you know, will even play into that and, you know, use that as a way to kind of, you know, go between their parents.
No doubt about it. I see it all the time. And it's unfortunate, but I see it all the time because, you know, I call them Disney dads.
Yeah.
And one dad's got to take his kids to Disney because mom hasn't taken them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is the cost involved?
Yeah.
As opposed to, in my opinion, just saying, no, we can't afford that. Kids will understand that. And
yeah,
it's tough love, but I get it. And fortunately, I've never been in the situation. I can't expound upon what they're going through emotionally and why they do it. Like I said, I've never been through that, but I've seen the results of what can happen when that scenario plays out. And unfortunately, it leads to financial problems at times.
With as many people who struggle with finances post-divorce, why do people not look at this as a potential option? Are there different myths behind it? Are there, stigmas? And if so, what type of stigmas are there that people are kind of reluctant to go down this
great
path?
Great question, Matthew. There's a lot of them. There's fear. There's the stigma of society saying, hey, if you do this, you know, you're not a good person. It goes by generations. My older generation, the 70s, they were just pounded into their head. You incur a debt, you pay a debt. And I get it. The 60s, they're a little easier. Get down to like the 30s, and they're a little bit easier. They're a little bit more accepting. It's like, hey, you know, I got myself into this mess. I've got to get myself out of it because I might be missing opportunities. So their generation is totally different than two generations beyond them. The oldest generation of the hardheads, they're really tough. I mean, they're hard. And they're the ones who should be filing to get rid of those debts before they pass on, because then their kids don't have to deal with them anymore.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of younger generation people, like in their 40s and 50s now, taking the bull by the horns and saying, mom and dad need to file bankruptcy. Yeah. And guess what? We're going to pay for it so that they can enjoy their retirement, their financial freedom in their 70s. Oh, and by the way, selfish reason, we're not going to have to pay for probate court or probate attorney.
Yeah.
Because we're going to take care of all that. And again, that's more prevalent than you know, but it's something that I think you learn as a child. And I'll be the first one to admit, my parents didn't teach me anything about money when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. So, you know, and again, I didn't really have any. When I got married, I was so broke, you can't imagine. I was $180,000 in student loans and no assets.
Right.
That's not true. I came into my marriage with one chair and clothes. And a week after I got married, the chair was gone. I don't know where it went. My wife will never admit getting rid of it, but it was gone.
Yeah.
I love that chair.
Tell me a little bit more about the, you know, the proactive side. Like people, so a couple who maybe instead of waiting till after the divorce, they might kind of, they just know going into it that we've incurred a lot of debt. Maybe that's the reason for the divorce. And maybe they can't even decide whose debt is what, you know, because they both charged up credit cards or,
and that's,
you know,
where,
took out
right.
mortgages and things.
You just hit a nail, a big one, Matthew. When they come to see me, you can see the marriage is broken, but at least one of them is smart enough to say, look, if we're going to be fighting about these financial issues, all we're going to be doing is spending money on attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
And you charged $3,000 on the visa because you bought a new toolbox and you spent, you know, this amount of money because you had some Botox injections. And it's never about the thing. It's about who has to pay for it afterwards, because one of them or both of them are thinking, hey, I'm not going to be able to afford all this crap on my own.
Right.
In other words, I got to go out and rent an apartment. That's going to cost me $1,800. you know, she's keeping the house or he's keeping the house. I've got $4,000 a month coming in. That's half my paycheck going to rent, food, this. I'm not going to be able to find it. So those are the smart people who come in. And when I see that, and I'm not saying smart, but those are the people who are thinking through the issues.
Right.
And I really like that because there have been times where we've got them on a financial plan. We say, look, we can do this, this, and this. And then I say to them, promise me one thing. 6 months after this is over, you're not going to get a divorce. You're going to work out the issues and you're going to see how it goes. Can you just try it for 6 months? And they both willingly agree. And I can tell you, it's been good because I know we've saved a few marriages just by getting those financial issues off their plate where they can breathe again. And that, to me, is meaningful.
What is it about finances that puts so much pressure on a relationship?
In my opinion, I can't be 100% sure, but social media hasn't helped at all. Social media hasn't helped at all.
Right.
And finances are usually something which is pretty private in the families.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it many, many different ways, again, 30 years, but many different ways where some families, everything's together. It's joint. They share everything.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the opposite where husband and wives have been married for 15, 20 years, and they don't even know what the other side makes every year.
Mm-hmm.
Separate tax returns, separate bank accounts. You pay this, I pay this. And I say, I don't care. Whatever works for your family works.
Right.
You know what I mean? If it works, it works. But the times come when people, I don't know if it's, you know, when guys go through middle age syndrome or whatever you want to call it, and they got to buy that Corvette to make them feel the youth. I don't know. I've never understood it and I've never been through it. So for me, it's just something of a little bit of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
I deserve this. Maybe the gentleman doesn't feel like he's being appreciated enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of see that in higher income families where the more the guy makes, the less he feels appreciated in the relationship. And then again, I've seen guys just be total jerks and I've wanted to reach across the table and smack them and say, you know what? Be a man.
Yeah.
You made the kid, raise the kid. Don't be a jerk. Don't say it's all her fault.
Right.
I don't like that. And I've asked a few clients to leave my office when a guy just being a knucklehead.
Right. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, let's say people are like, you know, either in the dating phase or maybe they are married. What are some like signs like early on that someone might say, this is headed towards like, I'm if this keeps going this way, I'm going to end up in Carmen's office.
Excellent, excellent question. And when you're spending, I mean, ultimately, I don't like the word compromise because it means somebody's giving something up to get to a desired result.
Yeah.
I believe married couples should make a decision. And once you make a decision together, you stay on the path. If you decide you're going to put $500 a month into the savings account or in the sock draw,
right.
You know what I mean? That's your decision and you stick to it.
Right.
That's just always the way I believe. I don't want anybody compromising. So I think people should have financial goals and they don't. Or you see one
Great
of them
point.
Who's the spender and one of them who's the saver.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think there should be a monthly meeting saying, hey, did we meet our financial goals? Over coffee on a Saturday morning, it takes 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Are we on the track that we set? What went wrong last month? What went good last month? You know, oh, we needed a new dishwasher. Okay. That comes out of the contingency pile.
Yep.
And nobody has those conversations.
Yep.
And I think
just about to say, it sounds like people should be running their relationship more like a business, but they think it, going back to what you're talking about, where it's everything is more about social media and the excitement and what
right.
it can do for me, what I can get out of this and those sorts of things.
Yeah. The dopamine rush from getting the likes.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly get a like out of meeting my goal and say, you know what? Hey, I know that if I die tomorrow, my family's going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And I don't want to die tomorrow.
Right.
But if I do, I got to have plans in place to protect my family. You know, and again, I was taught that guys have two roles in life. You provide and you protect.
Mm-hmm.
And in my house, it was if you can't protect, die try.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a man's role. Women pretty much handle everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. I think that's the proper roles. But again, that works for me. It doesn't work for everybody else.
How does this look in the eyes of court when there's like, let's say financial infidelity, which I guess I've talked about enough, like where someone has you know, fake accounts, or they're siphoning money somehow, or, you know, they're just being underhanded, shady to their partner. What's that look like?
Matthew, I wish I didn't have attorney-client privilege, because I could write a book on financial infidelity. I could. Uh-huh. And again, I wrote a blog on it years and years ago, and the response was overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I've seen stories, and I wish I could tell them to you, but where people had no idea what their spouse was doing behind their back.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was bad, and sometimes it was good.
Yeah.
But there is so much of it, and it's so prevalent. And I think that's probably one of the deepest, darkest secrets of American relationships today. It goes way beyond people mm-hmm. cheating physically.
Yep.
Way beyond that.
Yeah.
Way beyond that. And quite frankly, I probably am one of the worst ones about it, because my wife's a CPA.
Yeah.
And I've told her, I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go out and work. And if you see a problem, if we're not meeting the goals, you let me know immediately and I'll work harder. But I can't stand accounting. I think it's the worst thing in the world, but I'm married an accountant, so I get all the details.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but it's
do people go ahead and make control?
No, I was going to say, but people, I see it with credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
I see it with savings accounts. I see it with hidden savings accounts that he doesn't know about or she doesn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And those types of things where people are going out to places to cash advance their paychecks at places. It's kind of like going and buying drugs on the street so that you can, you know, hide this from your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that conversation with a lot of people saying, look, you got to come clean. You've mm-hmm. got to come clean and tell. And it led to a lot of tears in my office, but it's a good thing when it comes clean.
Yeah. What does that process look like, you know, with a lot of tears, or when someone does
come by?
Does it, does it exasperate the potential divorce? Does it work in reverse, where people tend to mend things after that?
It was usually when people come clean,
mm-hmm.
there's usually a lot of anger and resentment. Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe you were doing that with my money.
Yeah.
And it's not your money.
Right.
But I've seen it. But there was one story I got to tell you. There was a woman who came in my office one night. It was probably about 5:30, 6 o'clock. Her and her husband sat down. I'm going to make it real short. And at one point in time, she just broke open and said, I can't do it anymore. I've done this. And the guy looked at her. He turned. He looked at her. He grabbed her arm and he said, honey, I'm sorry. I've been a terrible husband. I thought to myself many times, how is she making these beautiful dinners for me? How is she buying me these clothes? How is she taking such good care of me when I only make so much money? She must be a Martha Stewart. She must be something. He goes, I feel terrible because I've dropped my husband duty to you. I've failed you as a husband. And I'm telling you, I had to get up and leave. There were so many tears that night. I got on and told my wife the story. And I was like, it was horrible, but beautiful.
Yeah.
All at once. That's the only time I've ever seen that happen. And they left holding each other's hands, hugging each other, because she got it off her shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm sorry. And she just embraced it. And then we developed a plan together to get rid of the debt together.
Yeah.
And it was a simple plan,
mm-hmm.
but it was something that had been building for, I would say, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So for 20 years of their lives, she had been holding back information from them. And her response was this: I know you worked really hard and I didn't want to bother you with these bills, but they've been keeping me up nights worrying for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of thing. That's what happens.
So it's not so financial infidelity isn't always necessarily, it's always a bad thing, but it's not always malicious in intent.
No.
Sometimes it sounds like people are, you know, they don't want to cause more stress. They don't want to worry the other person.
That's correct.
So they just stay silent. They suffer in the silence themselves.
Yeah. After that happened, Matthew, what I did is every time I see it happening, like a guy told me his wife's in the hospital and she's asking for the mail. And he goes, after she passed away, then we realized what happened. And I said, sir, you can't get mad at her. I said, I know this story. And she was doing it to you out of love, out of compassion, out of caring about you, out of empathy. And you got to think of it that way. And he broke down crying, saying, oh my God, I never thought of it that way, but you're probably right. And I thought, I'm pretty sure I'm probably right. But I don't want to, you know, I'm not there for kudos, but I really wanted him to see that his wife wasn't trying to hurt him or, you know, make him feel bad. The wife was doing it because she didn't want to burden him with something else. Mm-hmm. And I said, to me, that's the ultimate act of love. You're trying to take something off somebody's plate, which might stress them out, and you're willing to bear that burden alone.
What does it look like when someone actually goes through the process of, you know, bankruptcy? You know, they've met with you, they can't do anything with it, or, you know, with the debt, or they're just completely on the opposite end of the page on how they're going to handle it.
It's kind of like
they're definitely going through a divorce, and you know, they just can't agree on anything on how to handle it, on what to do with it.
It's kind of funny. I'm glad you asked because I want to get the answer out. But it's kind of like going through the grief stages, you know, when you lose somebody, the fear, shock, anxious, unbelievable. People go through the same process. When they call our office, they're fearful, they're scared, they don't know what to do. Then we give them a plan, and all of a sudden, wow. And then you plant the seeds of, what can this really look like at the end of it? Mm-hmm. And then they start working through the emotions. And then they work through the fear. And then they work through the financial side of it. And when they come out at the end, that's when we ask them for the 5-star review, because they're like, this has been, I was so worried, anxious about court, about this, about that. And you guys helped me through it, made it easy for me. And now I've got a clear path forward, which I never had before. And that's the best thing they could say to me. Now I've got a clearer path. I can see my future. I can see my goals. And I can see my dreams, and they're actually, I can realize them as opposed to just think I'm never going to achieve them.
So it goes back to the old saying that a person who fails to plan is planning for failure.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've heard you mention the word plan multiple different times. Yes. And so it sounds like people who end up in your office either had a lack of a plan or just didn't have a plan at all.
Probably about 60 to 75%. There are people who do go through devastating circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had a quarter for every time somebody said, I never thought I'd be in your office, I'd be retired a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's absolutely true. And I say, you know what? Bad things happen to good people sometimes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could have done to prepare for it when it happened. And now you're left to pick up these pieces. And as humans, that's what we do.
Well, awesome. Well, Carmen, you have dropped so much knowledge today. And I mean, all of this has been new to this podcast. And so we are appreciative. Could you tell people where they can find you at if someone wants to work with you, or if they know a friend or a family member
that
wants to work with you? Where can they find your information?
Anthony, if you go just Google Carmen Dellutri, mm-hmm. I'm all over the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're confined to the state of Florida.
Yeah.
But really, what we do is we help people through hard times. And I can't say thank you enough to you, people like you who do this type of work to help people through these issues. It's incredible the amount of pain that people feel. And really, when I find and I help them through the process, I find that just being there, telling them it's okay and telling them that they're not alone,
mm-hmm.
takes stress off of them. And, you know, to me, no, I've never met a bankruptcy attorney who retired as a billionaire.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's probably one of the most enjoyable areas of law you can practice because you can restore hope. And to me, that's my role in life. That's why God put me here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you are watching this, whether you were watching this on YouTube or on Spotify or on Apple, make sure you go down into the description box. You will also see Carmen's information there as well if you want to connect with him or if you want to send the information to a friend or family member. Also, make sure you go over to his social media pages and show him some love over there. Give him some extra follows if you have questions. And with that being said, thank you very much. We will see you in the next episode. This is the Matt Pfeiffer Experience, and we will talk again soon. You guys have a good one.
Thank you, Matthew. You take care. It was nice talking to you.